Welcome along to this Fraser Valander podcast. This is the first one since many of us have been on annual leave for a few weeks. So we thought it would take this opportunity to provide an update about what we know on the latest information about how the economy is performing and what might happen next. So for that, I'm delighted that joining me today are my colleagues Mary Spouge and David Iser. So Mary, if I can maybe turn to you first of all. It's been a wee while, as I mentioned, since we've provided an update on economic developments in Scotland. So could you just bring us up to speed about what we know about how the economy is performing?
So what we know so far is how much the economy has contracted during the period of the lockdown. So we've had data for March, April, and May, and what that's shown is that the lockdown has had the consequence of reducing the size of the economy by about 25% over the course of March and April combined. Since restrictions have started to ease a little during May. We've seen a small uptick in activity during May, and we can expect this to continue during June. And we'll get more data next week for the UK and Scottish levels on the growth during June. But it is worth remembering, as always, although these numbers are pretty unprecedented when we would normally be looking at economic statistics. That of course the shutdown was deliberate in order to protect public health. So we would have expected, given that large parts of the economy was mothballed, that we would see large reductions in activity during the periods of the lockdown.
And one of the things that we've mentioned on a number of occasions before is differences by sectors and how they are being impacted. Is there any further evidence that we're seeing about sectors that are perhaps maybe beginning to start back up again and recover, vis-a-vis ones who are still doing it tough?
Yeah, there's definitely sectors that were shut down much more than others. Many parts of the economy were able to operate in a new way and to get through the crisis, such as many office-based jobs, perhaps financial services and so on, have a much lower level of shutdown than other sectors, like, for example, accommodation food services. So obviously pubs and restaurants were closed, hotels were closed, and they had a very high level of shutdown. As things begin to open up, these parts of the economy that were completely shut down are showing some bounce back as they're starting to have some activity from a very low base. But what is clear is that they're operating at quite constrained capacity, so it might be quite a long time before they're able to recover to the levels that we were used to before the crisis.
Thanks. And one of the things that we should never forget in all of this is this global pandemic and economic crisis that we're facing isn't just linked, or isn't just impacting on Scotland or the UK, it's impacting on the world economy. I think the latest data from OECD and IMF are talking about the world economy contracting by around 5% in 2020, and trade and investment disproportionately hit in all of this. So it's clear that we're still in the midst of a major economic crisis. And you've mentioned before one of the challenges with this crisis is that actually it will only be once we start to unwind some of the support mechanisms that the actual full real world effects will start to kick in. And is that still your view?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we were talking about just there was sort of economic activity and what's been captured in GDP. But what's been slower to show the effects of the pandemic is in the sort of the unemployment rate. And what we're likely to see is some of the policy measures, and particularly the job retention scheme, is unwound. That many employers who have been able to keep their employees through the crisis because of this government support are no longer able to do that as they have to contribute more, and ultimately after it's removed after the end of October. So what we would expect to see that as the economy starts to grow, that the unemployment rate starts to get higher as well. So a lot of the unemployment that will be caused by the crisis might not actually manifest itself until perhaps into September and October and beyond, as employers find they just can't retain staff without the government support.
And that was very much one of the clear messages we got from the Business Monitor that we published last week, and we provided a quick further update on our website on Monday on that. And what I think was really interesting about the survey is that, coming back to your point about the data we have already, at least the official data, very much backward looking and telling us what's happened and how activity is, the survey was really interesting because it started to show actually what it was like for businesses on a day-to-day basis and how that was then going to impact on future decisions.
Yeah, what's quite clear from the Business Monitor and the Outlook for Business is that I guess the business space is in a more precarious position than it was before the pandemic, as you would expect. There's a, you know, a large proportion of businesses, almost two-fifths, who say that their cash flow position is insecure or very insecure, which is obviously a significant proportion of the business space. And also what's clear is that many businesses, almost half, have taken on additional debt during the period of the crisis, which means as they come through the other side, they're in a more vulnerable position, perhaps, to further shocks and operating perhaps at reduced capacity. So this is a worry for thinking ahead and how the economy might recover, that our business base is just generally in a more fragile position as we look at how it might grow in the future.
Yeah, and one of the things that again came out from the survey was the issue around debt and the rising debt levels across businesses. But one of the things that I was really struck by was the relationship between firms that were taking on more debt and their assessment of their position. And there was a clear correlation between companies taking on more debt and feeling insecure in their cash flow. And then also in firms that were saying that they were taking on more debt in the expectation that they were going to operate at much reduced capacity going forward. So I think that builds on your point about resilience of that. And there was also some interesting stuff in the survey around in the employment outlook for businesses as the job retention scheme is wound down.
Yeah, so chiming with what we said, over half of companies said that they, you know, as the job retention scheme is sort of unwound, that they plan to reduce the number of staff that they have. So, you know, it does seem to back up what we're saying, that there are going to be quite a few firms who are going to let staff go as the government support of the job retention scheme is removed.
And yeah, and I guess that gets into the wider question now about policy and where policy is heading. And today we had the Scottish Government's response to the Benny Higgins Review and the Economic Recovery Group with their response to the various announcements, initiatives or recommendations that group made. And we've not had to worry much about having lots of different policy documents and suggestions coming forward in the last few months. And we've, in a variety of writings, have set out our views on different aspects of this. One of the things that I thought was quite interesting again today was just to compare and contrast different approach from both governments in terms of how they handle an action plan, which is quite interesting for geeks like us and from a policy perspective, that the Treasury very much short, sharp, 30 pages of this is the crisis, this is what we're doing, and that's it. Where the Scottish Government take forward a much more broader base strategic assessment about their view of the world and the view of the economy, and a much longer document, almost as though it's written for an internal audience rather than a business audience in that context, about building that collegiate and that overall approach to the policy response, setting out their vision about the type of economy. It's quite interesting that the difference between these two approaches. And the second thing I think is quite interesting, and this is the key bit I think for us, will be is in both documents, even for their different approach to that, there's the statements about what's going to happen, whether that be about an employment scheme or about an investment scheme. But the key is now how it's going to actually be rolled out in practice. And we see that already, that challenges in delivery, whether that be the exam results yesterday and how that can impact on objectives around inequality and the like. So I guess that's the proof of all of this will be in what happens over the next few weeks and months when it comes to delivery.
Absolutely. And in terms of kind of practical support for businesses and the issues that we're talking about, one of the interesting findings from our survey was that generally Businesses thought that the Scottish government had handled the public health crisis maybe better than the UK government. But when it came to understanding the challenges that businesses face or supporting them through the pandemic, generally the UK government was seen as having handled that better. So it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, following, the publication of this implementation plan.
And I get, turning to David, much of the policy response that we're likely to see of the next few months and into even beyond that is going to be driven by the outlook for the public finances. Could you maybe just give us a brief update on what we know about the Scottish budget at the moment and where that money is being directed, and then we'll come on to what might happen next?
Well, the Scottish budget continues to receive consequentials from UK government announcements where those relate to spending areas that are devolved in Scotland, or indeed tax cuts where those relate to taxes that are devolved to Scotland. So the latest official figures that we have are from just after the UK government's sort of last major set of announcements in early July. And those figures are that the COVID-related consequentials for the Scottish budget are now around £4.6 billion. So an additional £4.6 billion has come to the Scottish budget for 2020-21 since the Scottish budget was published back in February. How the Scottish government is using that funding, well, the information does kind of come out slightly in various sort of dribs and drabs of policy announcements. It might not be until the autumn budget revision later on in September when we get a sort of comprehensive setting out by the Scottish government of exactly, you know, how that 4.6 billion is accounted for.
And I guess looking beyond that, I don't mean to give you a really difficult question because I know it'll be really hard to answer, but the direction of travel for the Scottish budget beyond this is extremely uncertain, isn't it, at the moment?
Oh, it is. I mean, well, one of the other things that we'll find out later on in September is this the final figure for the income tax reconciliation in 2018-19. So there's two interesting sort of Scottish budget fiscal events later on in September, the autumn budget revision that sets out where this additional spending is going, and then this income tax reconciliation figure. That's the kind of the figure for what was budgeted for in 2018-19 in terms of income tax that effectively the Scottish government didn't actually have because the forecasts at the time were a bit too optimistic. So that will have implications for the Scottish budget next year. But the major uncertainty for the Scottish budget will continue to be what happens at a UK level. And there's still just, colossal amounts of uncertainty about that, depending very much on what happens to the virus, what happens to the extent of economic restrictions, how consumers and businesses respond to that, and the extent to which the UK government keeps in place various support measures or replaces those with measures aimed more at the recovery rather than the support.
Yeah, and when will we know, when's your expectation that we'll know a bit more about that? I get, if we're talking about the autumn, we're probably still talking about that being highly uncertain about how much of the uplift this year will stay into next year and the year beyond, if it's still supporting public services through the legacy effects of the crisis. But then there's also then the question beyond that about how do we pay for all of this and what might be the priorities within the recovery. So do you think we'll get much clarity about that in the autumn?
I think firstly we have to hope that the UK government will have a budget this side of Christmas. They set a worrying precedent last year for delaying their budget into the spring, in some ways you can see with the end of the EU transition period ending in December, they might think they've got a case for doing that again this year. So we'll have to see. But I mean, it is incredibly uncertain. The OBR a couple of weeks ago published some analysis which was quite interesting. On the one hand, that sort of reiterated the huge scale of the fiscal response this year. They're forecasting that the UK's fiscal deficit could be around £370 billion this year. That's likely to be somewhere between 16 and 23% of UK GDP. What was interesting about what the OBR said about that is that a lot of people, I think, would automatically expect that if you're running that level of deficit this year and potentially a fairly high deficit next year, there'd be the need for some kind of fiscal consolidation in the fairly near term to sort of mitigate all of that. But actually, the OBR's central scenario is, you could argue, fairly optimistic. I mean, they basically seem to be thinking that there'll be some form of vaccine or something that means that by later on in 2021, a lot of the restrictions will have been lifted, a lot of economic activity will have come back, revenues will have picked up, a lot of these temporary spending measures will have been unwound. And so, although you've got a deficit this year of almost 400 billion, they're expecting it might fall to more like 100 billion next year. And interestingly, with debt servicing costs being as low as they are at the moment, you can actually have a fairly high deficit, you know, maybe 4-5%, and you're not adding any more to UK debt. So on one interpretation of the OBR's analysis, actually for the next few years, as long as the recovery kind of kicks in 2021 more substantially, we might not see the need for the sorts of tax rises that some people have been either fretting about or getting excited about, depending on their political viewpoint. But I mean, the OBR stresses that's all incredibly uncertain, but their central scenario is, you could argue, sort of it is to a degree reasonably comforting if you can believe what they're setting out.
That's fascinating, and it just throws in an additional dimension, doesn't it, to the uncertainty that exists in all of this. So from the public finances, it's what happens over the next few months through the pandemic, what more money we might need to support the recovery, and then what do you then start to do to unwind that, and what's your long-term strategy for the public finances? And we know in all of this that there's stuff that we've spoken about on numerous occasions before in the Institute about the long-term pressures on public spending, which haven't gone away. So you throw that into the mix as well, and you've got a really, really difficult balancing act for UK and Scottish fiscal policy over the next decade. And within all of that, the final thing just to touch on is that we've obviously had skirmishes around, the usual skirmishes around the Scottish budget about how much it's going up, down, and the complexities of the fiscal framework in all of this, and if there's going to be issues around timings of budgets, and that's going to bring those home in all of this. So the government again today in their recovery report talking about the review of the fiscal framework, which is due next year, and the importance of that. So perhaps maybe we could just close with some of your reflections on that and where you think the key areas of focus might be.
The first thing to say probably is that the Scottish Government did, of course, have that request for additional funding flexibilities this year. They asked the Treasury a month or so ago if they could have various additional funding flexibilities. These were the ability to borrow up to £500 million to fund additional resource spending, to transfer some capital spending to the resource side of the budget, and to draw down a bit more of their underspends on capital from previous years. And I think, you know, those requests I mean, I think they were quite reasonable and sensible things to request in terms of flexibilities. That's not necessarily the same as saying there was definitely a case for using all of those flexibilities in full right away if they got them. But, you know, having those as insurance did seem to be sort of reasonable things to ask for. The Treasury sort of rejected those requests outright. I suppose the way that the Scottish Government framed the requests, it was always going to be relatively easy for the UK government to reject them, in the sense that, you know, the Scottish Government was basically asking, this was a month or so ago, so the Scottish Government was asking for these flexibilities that would allow it to increase spending by about £1 billion this year. And of course, subsequent to that, the UK government announced spending increases, which generated consequentials for the Scottish budget of around 800 million. So at that point, it's relatively easy for the Treasury to say, well, you presumably no longer need these flexibilities because we basically just increased your budget by the amount by which you were requesting flexibilities. I mean, on the other hand, you know, you could argue that these flexibilities wouldn't have cost the Treasury anything. So why were they so reluctant? And probably the best explanation is just to say that this reflects the sort of complete breakdown of trust and willingness to cooperate between the two governments that seems to exist at the moment. And in fact, the Scottish Government had a kind of double whammy back in July, because at the same time that the Treasury rejected these requests for additional flexibilities, additional budget flexibilities, the Treasury also gave the Scottish Government no notice whatsoever of the changes to stamp duty policy, which did have implications for the Scottish Government. And indeed, the estimates of the knock-on financial implications for the Scottish budget of that policy change were subject to quite significant change within a few hours of the policy announcement. So, I mean, again, that just sort of reiterates that the two governments don't seem to be cooperating very effectively on budget issues, as is the case for other issues as well. So that doesn't bode particularly well for the longer term review of the fiscal framework, which is due to take place between 2021 and 2022. The Scottish Government seems undecided as to whether it wants to argue for that review to be brought forward. I think there are risks to bringing it forward, certainly at the moment. But the Higgins review seemed to suggest that it would be sensible to bring it forward. And I think since then, Kate Forbes has suggested that she thinks it's less sensible to bring it forward. And I think probably that latter view is quite sensible, I think.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that I keep just reflecting on when we talk about the fiscal framework review is that it's evolved into very much at the moment being very much a focus around, are there enough flexibilities to manage the Scottish budget through a major crisis like COVID-19? And that's a really important part. But actually, that wasn't really what was thought of the review, the purpose of the review back in 2016. If we remember, the big purpose of the review coming up was the block grant adjustment mechanism. And the Scottish Government secured their favoured method at the time. But the alternative methods, which potentially could be more tricky for the Scottish budget, are still on the table in that context. So one of the key parts of the fiscal framework review is about what's the right block grant adjustment. And yeah, it might be something that the Scottish budget might not be good to wish for that in the Scottish budget. But also as well, the thought of trying to do that in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic and working out whether or not the Scottish budget would be better off under different methods just strikes me as being something exceptionally difficult to do. So accelerating it forward on that practical point would be a real challenge. So just to conclude, there's obviously a lot of big things in all of that. The next few weeks and months are going to be really interesting. There's lots of data coming out which will be good to keep an eye on. There's GERS in the middle of all of this, which will be an interesting context as well, talking about deficits and things. Interesting, that would be for the year 2019-20. So it won't really be impacted by COVID-19 yet, but I'm sure that will generate the usual informed debate and commentary that we usually expect around that time. And we'll have our next commentary coming out in September. So lots to look forward to, lots of analysis to be done, and yeah, it promises to be a really interesting period. So thank you very much, Mary and David. And we hope everyone can join us soon for our next podcast.